Buddhira Yukta नास्ति बुद्धिर्युक्तस्य
न चायुक्तस्य भावना
न चायुक्तस्य भावना
न चा भावयतः शान्तिः
न चा भावयतः शान्तिः
अशान्तस्य कुतः सुखम्
अशान्तस्य कुतः सुखम्
So in verse 65, having said that, so when that prasada buddhi is there, it means when that shanti is there, the tranquility is there in the mind, for the mumukshu, for the jnani, then all of the dukkhas, all of them are destroyed for that person. They're demolished, because what's causing the agitation, what's causing the dukkha, really is the raga dvesha. Without the raga dvesha, there's no reason for dukkha. If the prasada buddhi is there, and self-knowledge is there, then the shanta vritti that the person is enjoying doesn't have much to do with the creation, right? It doesn't have to do with the creation or all of my experience being in this way or that way, because my very attitude frees me. That prasada buddhi frees me from the ups and downs of the creation, the raga dvesha getting me away or not getting my way. It doesn't really matter, because whatever it is, I have that prasada buddhi, so that shanti is firm for karma yogi as well as for jnani. So then, to such a person who has that prasada buddhi, quickly, for such a person, this knowledge, nishtha in this knowledge, takes place quickly. So what's really beautiful about that also is that prasada buddhi, you can be gaining that prasada buddhi way before you even come to this teaching. You could have been living a dharmic life and had so much shraddha and devotion in Bhagavan that you would have that prasada buddhi, and then you come to this teaching, the mind already has that natural shanti, because it's not asking the creation to be in a particular way. It's not all about your raga dveshas. And so then when that knowledge is given, the mind is ready to receive it, and it takes it just like, Swamiji says sometimes, takes it just like fire. It's like the mind just goes, pshh, because it sees so clearly. The mind already is like a beautiful, clean glass or a beautiful mirror. And so once it's stated, the person just gets it. In fact, there were stories like that told about Ramana. When Ramana, one Maharishi, everybody probably is familiar with Ramana, right? He's really considered a great Mahatma in India. And Swamiji, Puja Swamiji himself, wanted to study with Ramana. He just missed it. Ramana passed away just before Swamiji made it to see him. But Ramana had this, when he was young, I don't know, he's 15 or 16 or something, he was really questioning, who am I? And he had this idea, let me just see, pretend like I'm dead. So he's lying on his cot, you know, just pretend like I'm dead, okay? And so he made everything in his mind, he blotted out all the experience from his mind as though just totally withdrawing, you know, blotting out all experience, and he had an experience then. Of a samadhi experience. But at that time, the only thing there was his being, which me, without any objectification at all. And so that made him into a seeker, trying to figure out what all of this is about. And so he actually went on a trek and went up to somewhere around Tiruvannamalai, that beautiful mountain there, and went into a cave, and he just started meditating. I don't remember all the stories, I'm just making it really brief. But anyway, he went into the cave and just started contemplating. He just did nididhyasana all of the time. In fact, he didn't come out. He was just always meditating, being with himself. So he had already some samskaras. Samskaras means he was already an unusual person in terms of the antikarana shuddhi that was there. So he was just contemplating, and devotees started to just kind of discover him and take care of him while he was contemplating. That's all. I think for many years he was just kind of stayed there in samadhi. And so then he was taken up to where his ashram was, and they all started for him that ashram. Still, he was just contemplating. And as the story goes, some pundits came to visit him because he'd built quite a reputation just from people talking about him and the beauty and kind of his beauty and all of that. So the pundits came to see him. It makes me think of like the three wise men coming to see Jesus, you know. So these pundits came to see him, and they started teaching him the Upanishads. But the very interesting thing about it, as this is reported, is that as they were telling him the Upanishads, it was just clear as day. So they were just telling him something that was already kind of the fact of his mind, because there was no raga dvesha, there was nothing in the mind, there was just being with my being. What happened because of that? So the story goes. What happened because of that is he no longer stayed in meditation, because he saw that whether his eyes were closed, open or closed, it wasn't any different. Because this is mithya. He recognized that this creation itself doesn't have any separate being, any other kind of clay pot, like clay pot, didn't have any separate being at all from his own being. Just imagine now, no raga dvesha there, so the mind is just a shantavritti, you know, filled with myself, because I'm contemplating nididhyasana all the time, so I'm just filled with myself. But he just thought, up until that time, I'll just stay with myself. And then he came to realize that there is nothing but himself, you know. And so then when his eyes were opened or eyes was closed or this thought or that thought, it made absolutely no difference. And then he was able to really be with his students. He did not have like that traditional teaching, that traditional sampradaya that could really take a student to where he was and give nishtha. But what he did do was with a small group of students that would be surrounding him, it was always the who am I? You'd always have the who am I question. You'd always ask the students to kind of trace back, like, where is that thought really coming out of? When you say I, this me, where does that thought, what's the origin of that thought? Where does that thought land? Like, for instance, if you say table, right, the table thought lands on a table. It takes on that namarupa, right? So the word and the name are very related. So normally if you say me, it's going to land on me, but me in the form of this body, right? But if you think in terms of satyam mithya, the namarupa, the form of the body, right, is filled with me. Like the form of the pot is filled with clay, the form of the body is filled with me. That's where I can say I am the body, because there is no separation between me and the body. So now say, instead of having the who are you question land on something that you're looking at, he would direct it toward the me-ness, the conscious being, and hope that his students would get it in that way. He was a very, very beautiful Swamiji. He's always got a picture of Ramana in his, you know, in his room, a picture I very love very much. And he just missed seeing Ramana by, I think, just a very short time, a few days or something like that. So he went anyway, and ended up going a little bit later and met one of Ramana's sannyasis, who is one of his disciples, one of his students. And Swamiji didn't have knowledge at that time. You know, he'd read all the shastras backwards and forwards, and he was still agitated, you know, trying to figure out how do I know myself, how to know myself and all of this. And he went to the the sannyasi, who was sitting in meditation, was this person. Swamiji says he was just very, very quiet. He never talked very much, you know. But Swamiji got a darshan with him, and he asked the Swami. He said, "You know, Swamiji, I'm doing everything I possibly can. I don't know what else I can do. I'm contemplating all the time. I'm studying all the time. Doing everything I possibly can, but still, you know, I don't know, you know. What should I do?" And so this Swami is just kind of very quiet, meditative guy. He says, "That's the problem. Don't do anything. Don't do anything. Because you're already, it's such a beautiful thing, really." I don't know if I think it did do something for Swamiji. I don't know how much it did for him. But when you think of it, say if you already know, and you think of it, well, of course, if I'm doing something, I'm looking in the wrong direction, you know. Don't do anything, you're already completely here. Just be yourself. So, very, very nice. So, here, having said one quickly gains that knowledge, having that prasada buddhi, all of the sukha dukkha, you know, are are destroyed in that prasada buddhi for the one who has. Then that karma yogi quickly gains nishta, firmness, settledness in this knowledge. So now Shankara says for verse 66, sa iyam prasannata stuyate. He says, this prasannata buddhi, this shanti, this tranquility of mind is praised. Okay, so na asti buddhi yuktasya na cha ayuktasya bhavana na cha abhavyataha shantihi ashantaha asya kutaha sukham. The verse goes, buddhir ayuktasya, for the ayukta. The ayukta means the one who doesn't have the samahita buddhi. Samahita buddhi means a buddhi that is focused, you know, not focused in a focused way, but just generally with that shantavritti is present. So a person who doesn't have that ability, that shanti, ability to be present, for that person, there is no knowledge. Here, buddhi means knowledge. In the commentary, it says, buddhihi atma swarupa vishaya. Means the buddhi that knows the atma swarupa. Means the buddhi that through that shantavritti, in that shanti, what is that shantavritti filled with? Atma. In other words, whether there are perceptions or experience of the universe going on in the vritti, because there's no raga dvesha, what is filling the vritti is just the atma. As opposed to if the vritti, thought modification, is full of raga dvesha, then you have this, whatever you're perceiving, but it is also filled with raga dvesha, which creates a lot of agitation, a lot of dukkha, a lot of stress, a lot of suffering. So if those raga dveshas are not there, whatever the kaleidoscope is taking place in the mind, whatever the perception is in the mind, there's nothing present there in terms of being other than myself. So let's think about that for a minute. When you have dukkha, any type of sorrow or suffering, perceptions take place in it. It is not really viewed or experienced as a perception. The mental state, the emotional state, fills the mind. And it outlasts the perception, right? So in other words, the vrittis, now I'm looking here, now I'm looking here, now I'm looking here, these namarupas, these names and forms are changing, 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 you know? But the dukkha is not changing, right? So the dukkha, suffering, any of these forms of suffering, these emotional states, and that's true with sukha also, emotional states have a longevity. They rise and they set, but as they rise and set in slow motion compared to the vrittis. And so my experiences are as though taking place in sorrowful me, in suffering me. And my being, the Atma, myself, is illumining then not only the namarupas, the names and forms that I'm perceiving and experiencing, it's also illumining the suffering me. See what I mean? And so now the suffering has kind of a longevity in compared with the vrittis. And so now when I am illumining the vritti, there's some other, something else present in those vrittis other than just namarupa. There's emotion. Emotion, and we don't care about the positive ones because the positive ones resonate with me, they're natural expression in Maya of my own being. But the negative ones are not a natural expression of me. The negative vrittis are actually brought about by ajnanam, the negative emotions. They're brought about by self-ignorance and they're really produced by raga-dvesha. There's no raga-dvesha there. These emotions aren't produced. That's why as we withdraw, or as we're able to neutralize those raga dveshas with the prasada buddhi, then my mind enjoys that prasada, that tranquility, and the life experiences take place in that tranquility, and then the buddhi is available to act objectively to those experiences that I'm having. But if sorrow, if pain, if suffering, you know, which is produced by the raga dvesha, is overwhelming the buddhi, then the buddhi is usually responding out of the suffering, right? Because the suffering lasts longer than the vritti, right? So the vritti, the buddhi, the wisdom, is not necessarily present at the time that the dukkha is there. See that? This is really, I want you to see this, so nod your head. Because there's something important here. This is what is normal for us in samsara. The raga dvesha, like and dislike, for whatever reason, it doesn't work out. I have a reaction, you know. I have some sort of emotional reaction. It's not just, it's an emotional reaction. It's of anger, or of agitation, or of suffering, or of hurt. All of these are, you know, the negative spectrum is what is usually invoked. Okay? So now, the buddhi is thinking, feeling, or the mind is thinking, feeling, acting out of this negative emotion. Okay? So that kind of, in a sense, takes away my viveka, unless, so this is just a little aside, but it's because we are doing this and learning how to do this every day. When you have normally a reaction, and so you have some agitation, anger, sorrow, etc. Okay? Normally then, we're viewing the world through that lens, right? And responding from that, those feelings. Until I learn how to objectify the dukkha, objectify the suffering. See? The instant I objectify the suffering and come into relationship with it, the buddhi is no longer acting out of that lens. I am now helping or being present to that emotion. That's totally different. And it's not that hard to do. The buddhi has this capacity to objectify once you learn. It's a simple thing. Like say the suffering, the sorrow, the dukkha is there filling the mind, you know? And then everything is dukkha, right? All the experiences are tainted, filled with the dukkha. But if you speak to the dukkha, to the sorrow, like if you say something to it, I see you're really suffering. You're really unhappy. You're really so sad, you know? You're so hurt. Now there's a subject-object relationship between the buddhi and the manas. The emotions actually are held in the manas, we say, the negative emotions. The instant you do that, the buddhi comes back. Otherwise, it's just overwhelmed by the manas, and it's as though there's no buddhi there, really. It's just a spokesperson for the dukkha. The instant you say it, though, I know you're so unhappy, you know, tell me what's really going on. Now, part of you, that buddhi, you know, the mind, the antakarana, has been divided into subject and object. And now you, the one who is the subject, has made the emotion the object, right? And now you can help that emotional state. And you yourself are free of it. And so that is something, that's something that we learn how to, even in dealing with the unconscious material, we are going in as the buddhi that is free from that little one, you know, who is there to help. And so the Satuka Shanta buddhi remains intact and brings its aid, its help, and its love, and its care, and all of the positive emotions that belong to us, brings to the aid of the little one inside. If my mind is overwhelmed by dukkha, by suffering, my buddhi objectifies it and brings all of the emotions that are natural to me, natural to the Atma, to its aid, to care, to love, to support, to want to understand, to be helpful. That's what I become in reference to that negative state. So every time I do that, the dukkha no longer belongs to me. The dukkha is something, the dukkha, in fact, in reference to myself, even to the buddhi, is destroyed, right? But I then come into relationship and can help it. So when we're learning all of this, all this inner child work and how to, if I have a bad relationship with somebody, how to really kind of objectify that and come be helpful in the situation, I'm actually removing the dukkha from me and then coming to its aid with the natural, beautiful qualities that belong to me. So here it says, the knowledge or the wisdom means that Atma Swarupa, my own nature, you know, which really is what is filling my mind, right? That buddhi is not there for the ayukta. Ayukta means the one who doesn't have that prasada buddhi, for whom those raga dveshas have not been neutralized, because it's being overwhelmed by that emotion, right? If the raga dveshas are acting out. So for such a person, that buddhi can't be there really, that knowledge can't be there for the ayuktaha, the one who doesn't have that prasada, that tranquility. And also, ayuktasya bhavana, and also that bhavana, that meditative state, or that what the Shankara says, what he says here is what's called ayuktasya bhavana atmajnana abhinivesha. Abhinivesha is a word which means I have a commitment. My interest is toward my knowledge. You know, that's what I care about. That's where my concentration is. That's where I naturally go. And so I have that Atma Jnana Abhinivesha, means my mind is always resolving into myself. That's what we call jhanam, meditation. Your mind is always naturally resolving into your own being. You have to remember, say, if the raga dveshas are neutralized, the only thing that is filling my mind is my own being. You know? And when that's the case, then my buddhi has no distance to go to be with me, just like the pot has no distance to go to be with the clay. There's nothing intervening. And I've discovered my own being as Ananda, to be the source of Ananda. So my buddhi remains with me. Okay? You have to remember, that's not always true for me. Well, that's because we've got little ones inside. We've got little ones inside, and also the raga dveshas take a while for them to settle down to the degree that they need to settle down, you know, so that the universe is not a threat to me in any way, nor are the little ones inside. I am with them. I am with the universe. I am with my emotions in a helpful way. So that one who's with the emotions instead of being the emotions, and with the little ones instead of being the little ones, the one who's helpful, that's a Jivan Mukta. That person, in the sense if you have knowledge, that person is, I'm with myself, and being with myself, I have access to these beautiful emotions to come to the aid of the hurtful emotions that are still hanging on for one reason or another. So then he says, so the ayukta neither can have knowledge really, because the mind has too much conflict in it, raga dvesha, and also there's no contemplation, there's no bhavana, because I'm contemplating on my raga dveshas, right? To the degree there's raga dvesha, that's where my ananda is. Where does your mind go? Always. It goes to your ananda. If the ananda is superimposed on something or someone, that's where your mind is, you know? Just how, that's what it is. We're ananda chasers. Naturally so, because that is me. The ananda is me, and my mind doesn't know that. And so it's always struggling to have experiences of me, you know, to have glimpses of me, to create shantavrittis. And the only way it knows how to create shantavrittis is to fulfill desires, you know? Like even the desire to take a walk in nature, the desire to do dharma. This is all because I experience, and doing dharma, I experience a deep shanti. And that's what I love. I love the ananda that comes from doing a good work. That's just from experience, you know? If I take walks in nature or listen to beautiful music, or visit a friend. Why? Shantavritti. These things give shanti. I don't have those words, but that's what's happening. They give a shantavritti, and I feel my own presence, and I feel at home, and I feel at peace. You just think of all of the things that you do. I think, you know, for those of us who have some, I say honestly, blessed enough to have some experience with animals, you know, shantavritti. They just exude something that is contagious. A contagious well-being as they sprawl out. Like I get to have little Charlie right now. You know, she just sprawls out all over everything. You say, oh, no. It's just actually just so open to your heart. You know, animals are a great blessing. So anyway, so no contemplative mind, raga dvesha. No knowledge or good direction. Okay, so then it says, so, and for the one who doesn't have a contemplative mind, what they mean by that, where the mind sits with myself, you know, either through dhyanam or through study or through learning or understanding, it's what I love to do. My mind likes to just buzz around me, the Atma. But for a mind that is abhavayataha, Nacha, and also not abhavayata, that doesn't have that abhinavesha, that dedication or that love for the Atma, for that Atmajnanam, for the Atma, there is no shanti. There's no shanti. Because if myself isn't available for me, I am only looking for it. To understand how serious this is, if the ananda, if that wholeness, my own being, is not available for me in a shantavritti, because of course I don't know the self, which is ever-present, you know, then that mind is agitated. It's trying to find it. Now, if I fulfill a desire for a few moments, I have a shantavritti and I feel at peace. But as soon as that closes over, it's time to move on. Now I have that thing at work for 15 seconds. I have to find something else. I have to find a situation, something where I can have that shantavritti and be myself. I don't know that's what's happening, that I'm being myself, but that's the problem also. I don't know that's what it is. If I knew that's what it is, as soon as I have that, my mind would just turn directly toward me. But you know what? We don't. When you got a shantavritti because you've fulfilled the desire, instead of going right into the ananda of your own being, you stare at the object and want to hang on to it and control it. And that's the beginning of the end right there. Right. And so he says, for the one who is ashanti, for the one who doesn't have that shanti, kutaha sukham, how can there be happiness? How can there be any happiness, any sukha? It's not possible, because whenever that shantavritti is not there, like for instance, even in born out of ajnanam, the fulfillment of a desire that gives a shantavritti, if that's there, I have a moment of shanti, but as soon as it goes away, if that shantavritti is not there, then I'm out searching again, trying to find a place to land, you know? Just even if it's only for safety for a few moments or for a few minutes, I need to find a place to land where I have some experience of that shanti, because in that shanti, myself is manifest. And because I don't know that I even have a self, I'm totally dependent on that manifestation. But for mumukshu, with the prasada buddhi, and because the mumukshu is gaining knowledge continually, it's just that the mind has to go through that maturation process and the resolution of raga dvesha. Still, for a mumukshu, when I have a shantavritti, you know, I go to myself because I know about myself. It's the first thing we start teaching about is the nature of the self. You know, I go toward me. And then as the mind becomes mature, I just am me. There's no threat. There's no threat because I don't have that ajnanam, that self-ignorance anymore that makes me chase after raga dvesha as binding desires. That's really important also. You don't want to negate raga dveshas, your likes and dislikes, your desires as evil, as though you can get rid of them. You don't get rid of them. And you wouldn't be able to move. Do you want to get up? Do you want water? No desires, please. No. You have freedom to have the desires, but they have to be non-binding. Non-binding, that means for me, the desires can be there, they're fine, but my being is not at stake. Truly not at stake. Then these are non-binding desires. They're called dagda bijas, they're burnt seeds, these kamas. Kama means desire. Kama is raga dvesha. Kama is desire. What is desire? It's raga dvesha. I want this to be happy. I want to get rid of this to be happy. Those kamas become dagda bijas. Dagda bija kamas. Dagda means burnt. Bija means seed. Like a burnt seed can't sprout. All of this krodha, all this anger and agitation and hurt and betrayal and all of the horrible things that we can do, those things are not available, right? Because my ananda, my fullness is truly not at stake. And so that's the process our psyche is in. As we're mumukshus and gaining this knowledge, our psyche, the depths, our unconscious, and also our external raga dveshas that we come to this knowledge with, they are themselves in a process now. And it takes them their own time to work through all of this, you know, for all of these things to drop off. And so that's why you say, punah punah shravanam kuryat. You keep doing shravanam again and again. You know, shravanam means exposing yourself to this knowledge, shravanam manana nididhyasana. You keep in that sangha. And Swamiji would always joke, say, Swamiji, how long do I have to keep listening? It's going to be a few months or maybe a few months, or how long do you think it will be? I'm going to be here for a week. You know? There's no answer to that question. That's up to your own psyche. You know? Your own psyche, you have to give it the support, you know? See, Swamiji uses the example is if you plant a little tree, you know? And so you plant a little tree out in the meadow, you know, meadow, in the grass. Find a little tree out in the meadow. You need to put around it some protection, to keep the deer away, you know. And then at the farm we do that, all of the little trees, like I got an apricot tree and a cherry tree. So we put this, you know, some fencing, some wire fencing around it to protect it, you know. But as the tree grows and becomes strong, it breaks through the wire fencing. You know, it no longer needs that. You know? So like that, we keep in the, in satsang, we keep in the sangha, we keep our mind in this until, because we're giving it the sunshine and the water and everything it needs and the love, everything that it needs to grow, and the protection, everything it needs to grow, so it has a chance to work through all of these ragged dveshas, disappointments, unconscious things that we've had to swallow. Because a little child gets hurt also. It has lots of little ragas, you know. Little ragas like, I want mommy to love me. Now, how is not going to have that? You know, I want daddy doesn't love me. I want daddy to love me. You know, doesn't even have words for it, but it just has that and feels all these disappointments because we're not able to, as parents, we're not able to take care of them properly. So there's all of these hurts and all of these disappointments, unfulfilled, I would say instinctual ragas, you know. You have to take care of all of those things and give everything their own time, you know. Give the unconscious and the little ones their own time. But it's a very beautiful journey because I am helping them. Means I have the Shantavritti. You know, I come in to help them. If I have sorrow in my mind, I have the Shantavritti, my buddhi, you know, as a spokesperson for myself, enjoying my being, comes to help that one who's suffering from these raga dveshas, and helps in all kinds of ways. It depends on what that mind needs at that time. It may need some inner child work, you know. It may just need some knowledge. Just pull yourself, come on, let's come home, what are you doing? It just depends. But the buddhi knows, and the buddhi can give the hurt mind what it needs. The instant it objectifies it, it itself is free. It is that, it has that prasada, it has that shanti, it has that grace. And it's blessing the hurt part of the mind with that grace. That's why it's so very important, you know. And that's how the mind grows and changes in its own way. So he says, kutaha sukham. You know, if there's no shanti there, how can there be happiness? It's the opposite of happiness. You have to do something that you're going to be agitated. If the shanti's not there, you're going to be agitated and looking for the shanti. Unless you know how to objectify that agitation, then you are the shanti who's coming to the rescue of the agitation. See that? It's so beautiful. That this is all Bhagawan, that he's created these, you know, backup systems to help us. So it's an amazing thing. So, next verse.
Indriyanam hicharatam.
Yanmano
nuvidhiyate.
Tadasya harati prajnam.
Tadasya harati prajnam.
Vayurnavami
vampasi.
Indriyanam hi charitam yanmano anuvidiyate tadasya harati prajnam vayuhu navam ivampasi.
Okay.
So Shankara introduces this verse. One thing that's so beautiful, like if you get a translation, you have the Sanskrit, or you get a translation of Shankara's commentary, he always gives a little introduction to the verse, which is usually just a few words. It just makes a connection between the previous verse and the next verse, or sometimes it's a couple of sentences. Usually it's only like this when he says, Ayuktasya kasmat buddhihi na asti iti. He says like this, well, for what reason, why isn't there any wisdom or knowledge for the ayukta. What's happened? Why? Just because they're an ayukta means they don't have any shanti, you know, if they don't have that prasada buddhi. Why can't they have knowledge? Why can't I have knowledge if I'm agitated? Why can't an agitated mind gain knowledge? Because, but it's a good question, because I gain knowledge all the time when I'm agitated. Somewhat agitated, you know, say you're studying and you're doing in your school, you're doing your homework or whatever, and you're really angry and, you know, really agitated because you've been told you have to do your homework until you can go out or whatever it is. So you're doing it, you're doing your arithmetic and all these kind of stuff. You do a lot of things when you're agitated, you know, or when you're sorrowful, you know, crying, you're doing our work, you know. So why are you saying? I do all kinds of things. You know, I'm functional. I'm just unhappy. Unhappily, I'm doing my work. Unhappily, I'm reading my book. Unhappily, I'm doing my studies, whatever. So why? Why is the ayukta banned, right, from gaining knowledge? Well, the reason here is because your being is really of the opposite nature. See, it's not with an agitated mind, I can experience the rain and I can experience the sunlight, you know. In an agitated mind, I can read the directions. Because that agitation, I can still function, I can still perceive, I can still engage in the world. But that agitated mind is being turned now toward the one who is free of agitation. And that's pretty tough. Now, I will say, though, that for a jnani, for one who has recognized the one who is free from agitation, that one who is free of agitation is very much there when the agitated mind is there. But that is a wonderful thing. But to have that viveka, how to have that viveka when the mind itself is agitated, it's not available because it's going to have to see the one who is unagitated from the standpoint of the one who is agitated. So that is a problem. Okay? And for as far as a agnani knows, the agitation is caused from an unfulfilled raga-dvesha. That's why the agitation is there. Which is another kind of important thing to realize, how subtle it is when we want something to be different. You know, because even in your relationships with people, you don't really think about the reason you're angry or annoyed with them is because you want them to be different. You have a desire for them to be in a particular way. And that's why when they're not acting in that way because it's a desire, you're upset. You know? We don't think about it like that. We just think, I'm upset. I'm just upset. This person is really irritating me. But you have to really look at what is really behind the upset. Well, it's a thwarted raga. The thwarted raga, the thwarted desire, transforms into anger and irritation, which is a verse we just, a few verses back, we saw that. The thwarted desire transforms itself into krodha, into anger, you know? And so every anger comes out of a kama. Kama is raga dvesha, you know? And so it's very helpful, I think, for us to recognize our expectations and even our expectations toward ourselves or toward our own mind. Or you can get very upset about my mind. My mind isn't behaving as I want it to behave. Raga, you know? So instead of being with the situation as it is, you can be with the situation as it is and try to help. But these raga dveshas, a lot of them are next to invisible until you know. You know? And then you can start looking. Then you can say, well, you know, I am upset because this is what I was wanting and I'm not getting it. It's very, very simple. And so I learn how to withdraw the ragas that even in the most subtle level, even the ones that are attacking me, you know, they attack their own, can attack your body. Your raga dvesha can attack your body, it attacks your mind, you know, it attacks your looks, it attacks everything. You have these expectations, and they cause a lot of suffering instead of being able to be with it in a helpful way. It's nice to start seeing that. So he says, why can't knowledge be there for anayutta, for somebody who doesn't have the shanti that really comes from that prasada buddhi? Prasada buddhi becomes more and more subtle, you know, because the prasada buddhi is what which takes everything, which receives everything as prasad from Ishwara. But what we don't realize, right? We don't realize initially how much we need to receive with that prasada buddhi. Some of it's very, very subtle. It has to do even with my own sense of victory and defeat, my own even trying to be a good person and not living up to my good personness, you know, or I'm not living up to, you know, I should be more mature by this time, I should know more by this time, I should have more jnana-nishtha at this time. So I'm disappointed, you know. You don't even think like that. You just get annoyed and frustrated. But the thing is, we have to look at it and we have to give it all. We have that prasada buddhi, you know, and then we become objective. Okay, you're not maturing. Let's see what that's all about. What's that all about, you know? And then you become helpful. It becomes very nice. So anyway, so why this ayuktaha cannot have knowledge? Because it gives an example. Indriyanam hi charatam yanmanaha anavidiyate tadasya harati prajnam vayuhu navam eva ambasi. He says, that mind, the manas, the mind anuvidiyate, which tags along, which follows along, the mind which follows along the indriyas, your sense organs, that are just moving. Your sense organs never stop moving. You know, now I'm looking here, now I'm looking here, I'm looking here. They're always wandering about just by their very nature. So the mind that is attached to them, following them around, as though I'm moving right along with you, you know, I'm moving right along with you, then for them, those sense organs, because of the fancies that I pick up, because there's no atmajnanam there, for the fancies that I pick up, is it lands here or it lands here, or, oh, that looks good, or I want that, or I want that. And the mind is just attached, attached. It's just simply following along the sense organs. He says, for that person or for that mind, the knowledge is stolen away, prajnam. That the jnana, that's stitta prajna, that prajna, that knowledge is harati, whisked away, stolen away. And he gives an example. Vayuhu navam eva ambasi. Like the wind, like the vayu, steals away a ship in the waters. Right? So the ship is going along, the wind comes along, it's sailing along nicely, it's on course, and the wind comes along and whoosh, there it goes, off course, and now it's going in this direction. So like that, just like a wind, just like the wind can knock a ship off course, these, my indriyas that are just moving right along, because of my mind, because of the fancies in my mind, all of a sudden, whoosh, I find myself off course. No longer just with myself, I now have something that has caught my fancy, and so instead of being with myself, I'm off running in this direction. And so this takes us back to the previous several verses back, the Prasavam, where Bhagavan says, you know, like the mind is very, very strong, and it can violently, the indriyas means the sense objects, which the indriyas are landing on, they are very, very strong, and they can just violently, with great force, take the mind away. So this is, we're kind of, one more verse we're doing tomorrow. It's really concluding, in a sense, concluding this section. How does it all work? How is it that my mind is swept away? How can I have the shantavritti? It all has to do with the neutralization of raga-dvesha. The raga-dveshas are the wind, really. You say the indriyas are the wind because they're landing on this and landing on this and my raga. But it's really the indriyas land on something where my raga-dveshas, you know, are not resolved. And so that becomes a trigger. since the indriya is naturally going along, trigger, I got a trigger, then the raga dvesha come into play. And then I find the mind running after that, goes in that direction, because raga dvesha, because a kama has come up, you know. And so, like that, the mind gets continually swept away. How to be free of that? I have to neutralize the raga dvesha. Really, and how do I neutralize the raga dvesha? Really, it's atmajnana. Self-knowledge is what neutralizes the raga dvesha. So how do I have self-knowledge? Because when I walk out the door, I've told you before, you know, I walked up, I am a jnani now. I am enlightened. And it didn't take as long as I thought. It just happened. Everything is so clear. Everything is wonderful. You walk out the door. Because, you know, those subtle likes and dislikes fill the mind. So it takes some time, some patience, some love, some, you know, willingness to go through all of that, you know, to be present to those raga dveshas and the problems they cause in the mind, to objectify them. And as soon as I objectify them, then I am the shanti. I am the prasada that is then brought to those little ones inside. Or I am the prasada, the Bhagavan's prasad, really. I'm the prasada that's also brought to the projections of myself on the world. Helps me to bring it back. Take some time. You should love the process.
Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.